Tsalo Falava, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Swisuiki. Coming up.
I feel slightly offended by the fact that this happens without their, oh, you're allowed to do that.
While there are sky-high hopes for Starlink, it's being used illegally in some Pacific countries. Also,
you know, translating what autism is in the Samoan language is not a positive language or word.
A Pacifica couple are on a mission to raise awareness around autism. And we take a look at what's ahead for our Pacific sports team this weekend. Broadband satellite service provider Starlink is now being used in the Pacific, but not every country in the region has been given the all clear to use it legally. In Vanuatu, they are confiscating equipment at the border, while other nations are taking a more lenient approach to the new service. Caleb Fotheringham has more.
Vanuatu Telecom and Broadcasting Regulator Brian Wingie says some people are illegally using Starlink.
They brought in from New Zealand or Australia and activated from there as if it was for New Zealand, Australia or any other country that Starlink already had the license. And they smuggle it into Vanuatu without the customs or at border knowing about it.
Starlink was given a temporary restricted license to operate in Vanuatu to assist with the cyclone recovery. But this is only for the Department of Disaster Management and it lapses by the end of April. Anyone else using Starlink is breaking the rules. Mr. Wingie says Starlink has not yet fully applied to operate in Vanuatu and does not know when it will be operational. Cook Islands Telecommunications Regulator Chair Bernard Hill says regulators who are banning the use of Starlink might have an overinflated view of their importance.
I feel slightly offended by the fact that this happens without their, oh, you're allowed to do that. In deregulated markets like Cook Islands, like New Zealand, the rule is, well, we let you do it until there's a good reason to say no.
Mr. Hill says the Cook Islands has allowed people to use Starlink roaming from overseas devices.
They approached me about a license 18 months ago. They still haven't resolved on their local structure. But unlike the other regulators, I have authorised the roaming of devices purchased in New Zealand and Australia, which is where most of them are done, and for their use in Cook Islands.
Mr. Hill says he doesn't know the exact number of people using the service, but it is enough to have a direct competitive influence on the main broadband provider, Vodafone Cook Islands.
I can't say they're happy about it, but they are at least realistic about this being, you know, part of the future competitive environment, and I believe they're doing their best to cope with the challenge that presents them.
Starlink promises to deliver high-speed internet to the remotest areas of the world. Mr. Hill says it's good news for the Outer Islands, which has been plagued by poor communications infrastructure. Fiji's Telecommunications Authority Chairperson, David Ira, says it's beneficial also for Fiji.
Coverage in those areas is probably one of the main reasons why we, you know, licensed Starlink here in Fiji, you know, to serve the remotest of the remote.
Mr. Ira says the company has already been issued a license and could be operational in Fiji by the middle of this month. He says some people have already brought Starlink equipment into the country and will need to switch over to the Fiji service when it's up and running.
Starlink is in the process of finalizing the operational processes and whatnot in preparation for launch. We are sort of encouraged that they are probably going to launch soon, and when I say soon, probably early Q2.
Mr. Hill says Starlink and similar companies are not going to make other forms of receiving internet irrelevant. He says countries need backup options in case something goes wrong, so internet out of the sky and through undersea cables will both be needed.
The 2024 Papua New Guinea National Population Census has been launched, with counting due to start within 3 months. This will be the country's fifth census, with the first one undertaken in 1990, when a population of 3.3 million was recorded. The last census in 2011 showed 7.8 million in the country, and the National Research Institute has estimated that by the 2040s, it will be more than 20 million. The PNG government has allocated some funding, but it's looking for international donors to also provide support. Our PNG correspondent Scott Whitey told Don Wiseman the way the count was done 13 years ago had raised questions about the efficacy of the information obtained.
The last one was done in 2011, the results of which were very problematic because it showed over the years that the figures weren't as accurate as the government said it would be. And that's proven to be problematic for sectors like health, education, even policing. About 2 weeks ago, I was speaking with one police commander, a senior police commander in Leh, who actually mentioned this in detail. He was concerned that the census has to happen very quickly because police commanders basically don't know how many people they have to deal with in towns and cities.
Yes, and do we know why it was a mess?
Primarily, it's boiled down to money issues, but the reasons behind why the census hasn't come about, there hasn't really been explained. I mean, the government said the census has to happen, that money has to be made available, and the Prime Minister's been hopping a lot of flack as well for, quote, calling on the minister to do the census when money hasn't been allocated for it.
Yes, well, they are saying it's going to cost around $52 million, but they haven't got all that money. They're looking for international donors to come to their aid. Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest concerns for those wanting the census to happen. They want the census to happen from previous experiences. They know that the government will run to donors for assistance. They say that they have 60 million up front. Where that 60 million has been drawn from, I'm not too sure. But the government says 60 million is available, another the balance of which has to come from somewhere. There are calls from communities that there has to be a lot more responsibility from the government. The government has to take ownership of it and just seem to be serious about conducting the census.
It's got a theme, this new census. Be counted, no one left behind. But it's a difficult, difficult thing to do in Papua New Guinea, in such a rural country, in such a rugged geographic place.
Given past experiences, the census were conducted, and from as early as I can remember, the people actually came to our houses and counted the numbers of people in the house and asked about who wasn't present. In the 2011 census, it wasn't done that way. I was wondering, I mean, this is on a personal level, I was wondering when the census officers would come to their houses, as we'd seen in previous years, and actually count people and record them. That didn't happen in 2011, and that had disastrous effects on the elections that followed, and the ripple effects have been wide-ranging and very serious.
One of the most dramatic things for Papua New Guinea is that it has had these exponential increases in population, and we're looking now, I guess, at something like 20 plus million to be measured in this next census. And that compares with, I think, 7.8 million back in 2011. And then the projections are that by 2040s, the population's going to be significantly bigger than Australia's.
The numbers don't show that the population has increased, and that's 2011 numbers. But you can just see the impact on schools. When it's enrollment day at the beginning of January, February, you can see that the schools are having trouble just dealing with the sheer numbers of kids coming to school wanting enrollment, kids with their parents wanting enrollment. You can see the impact of the population on the medicine shortages. A lot of people are focusing on the medicines not getting to the health centers, but the fact that medicines are running out at a much faster rate in the health centers shows that there has been a population increase. The number at just one hospital in Leh is, I can't state the exact number, but the daily births are worrying, you know, upwards of 20 to 50 a day. It would be higher on some days, on some months. You can just see the signs in all those sectors, and you know that the population is not accurate.
Pacific communities with negative perceptions of autism are being called upon to rethink their views and the language that describes people on the spectrum. A Samoan husband and wife duo who lead a Wellington-based Pasifika autism support group called Passage are helping to raise awareness this April for Autism Appreciation Month. Autism is a spectrum and lifelong neurodevelopmental condition affecting how people perceive the world, think, behave, and communicate with others. Alicia Foon spoke with autism advocate Daniel Filemoni, who says their Pasifika Lead Group has been a vehicle for change when it comes to autism.
Autism Month is every month for us, literally day by day. When we started off in the journey, when our son was diagnosed post-COVID, we were looking for spaces that were quite personable to us, you know, around being Samoan Pacific. And my wife already done her research, and she connected us through to a passage group that was already established and started here in Wellington. It's been a blessing being a father to an autistic child, my son. And the reason being is because being a minister's son, raised up the traditional way through the Methodist Church, I was actually quite fixed in my mindset around, you know, how to do things culturally as well. So what my son has done is sort of opened my mindset and my heart into just different ways of looking at things. I used to be the guy, you know, oh, look at that naughty kid. You know, I used to be black and white, but now I'm quite colourful. You know, I'm always like, oh, you know, there's something happening here that we don't understand. And I never would have had that mindset if my son was a diagnosed. So I'm actually grateful. With our journey, it's not a 9-to-5 or a 9-to-3, it's a 24/7. And the more we're open about that and, you know, in a traditional Samoan family, the more we've been able to encourage other Pacific families or just any family that you have to find the recipe for you. Being Samoan, first and foremost, the term for autism is not a term I would like to use or that the Samoans like to use, you know, in terms of their language. You know, translating what autism is in the Samoan language is not a positive language or word. And that's only because there still needs to be work done around what that looks like in the Samoan community. I'll give you an example. So takiwātanga, that's a beautiful word, you know, used in Te Reo Way. And we tend to use that a lot in our spaces. Yes, it's not Pacific, and that's okay. But, you know, it is Te Reo Māori, and they've captured the essence and beauty of what being an autistic person or being an advocate for an autistic person, people's family. That's where I want to head to for Pacific, finding a word that captures in a positive light. So if we're thinking about changing Pacific terminology for autism, that's a massive, massive work plan or work program. And you know what? If people are listening to this, I challenge those organizations to get that started, and I'll be more than happy to assist and provide, you know, my 5 senses and as a proud autistic father, and got my wife as well. And then, you know, we'll be able to connect communities, bring them together, bring families together, and then just talk and speak about autism and what that is for people. And obviously everything's done through, you know, the families, the Pacific families, the churches, the communities, and how do we get them on the journey? So it's about not leaving anyone behind when that kōrero, when that talanoa starts. But before we even get to that, we need to identify which are the agencies, which are the groups that we need on that table first and foremost. So, yeah, it's massive, eh?
And when you go back home to Samoa and you've just come back from a trip, how do you go about creating awareness within Pacific Islands when you do visit?
I think for us it's about being proud, first and foremost, you know, of the journey. You know, we don't shy away from what this looks like for our family, so we're quite open. Because we've just arrived back from the islands, you know, here in New Zealand, we're great around, you know, their awareness of this disability. They had a green card for us, and it said invisible disability, and they identified to their workers that, you know, my son was on a spectrum. And what that did was allow my son to be him. And what that also did was build the awareness around the people that we were traveling that, you know, my son's on the spectrum. Not that he was getting any special treatment, but he was just getting a different treatment. You know, he's got sensory needs to sound, sensory needs to light and all that stuff. So, you know, I was really proud of how those different agencies or those experiences impacted our journey to Samoa with our family. And then, you know, getting to Samoa, because we haven't got a word to identify or a positive word that we like in the Samoan language, we just continue to use autism and autistic. And then we explain in the Samoan language what that is for us, because it's different. It's different. The spectrum is broad. It's massive. To me, that's the richness of what capability looks like, of what capacity looks like. And was it from a cultural lens? Because the talanoa around being an autistic person or what autism is in the Samoan language, it's beautiful. So we, you know, we talk about you know, connectedness, talk about collaboration in the Samoan language, and it takes it away from what the actual meaning is in Samoan. He doesn't have autism, he is autistic. And the more we get used to that language, the more our people understand. And the way that we explained it to our Samoan families is that, you know, I would never say that you have Samoan, you are Samoan. It's the same for our son. He is autistic and he is Samoan. So, you know, it's things like that. And I think once they understood that, they, like, you know, it was like a light bulb moment. And for me, that was like, oh, man, maybe we need to be in the islands a bit more, started at the grassroots and then make our way over to New Zealand and see what we can do. But, man, if agencies or if providers, if community groups are wanting to connect and come together to work together around what autism is or what the spectrum is, I'll tell you what, my wife and I will be there to support in whatever capacity. And the beauty of that is that it's already got that collaboration.
The annual Hong Kong Sevens tournament will be played for the last time at the government stadium in Sokonpo this weekend after 30 years of hosting the event. That will feature both men's and women's teams competing in the sixth leg of the World Rugby Sevens series. And the fight for placings in the 2024 Super Rugby Pacific competition continues for the Fijian Drua and Moana Pacifica teams. Our sports journalist Elias Otora joins me with more updates. Pula Iliesa, what an exciting weekend it'll be in Hong Kong. How is that tournament shaping up and who are the front runners for the men's and women's teams?
Yes, definitely. 30 years after Sokonpo first hosted its Sevens tournament, the annual Hong Kong Sevens tournament, it's now finally coming down to a close with its last Hong Kong Sevens tournament this weekend. Sokonpo has been one of the favorites for many Sevens rugby players right across the globe, including Wesley Serevi and Brian Lima of Samoa, who both stated that they will miss the action at the famous government stadium over there in Sokonpo. This weekend, 12 men's team, 12 women's team, continuing the World Sevens Series, will be competing for the titles, which New Zealand are both defending in the men's and the women's. For the men's competition, definitely New Zealand as the defending champions will be the team to beat. Of course, Fiji going there with the new coach under Osea Kolonisau and trying to reclaim lost glory after having gone through 19 tournaments so far without a title win. Australia, South Africa, and top of the ladder, Argentina, who are leading the series at the moment, going into the sixth competition for the 2023-2024 season. Argentina will be one of the strongest teams to beat at the event. In the women's, it's Australia and New Zealand who are tipped to be meeting off in the finals, but of course, anything can happen in the three-day tournament with the finals scheduled for Sunday. All teams, including especially Australia, looking at making a lot of improvement, and the women's team from Australia, unfortunately, were not able to continue with the winning runs in Vancouver, and they'll be trying to come back into contention in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is one of the best and one of the first ever tournaments to have been played in the annual calendar of World Sevens, and it will be 30 years celebration in Sokonpo, and of course the teams will be out trying to win the titles on Sunday afternoon.
Now, moving away from the Sevens, the Super Rugby Pacific Series seventh round will also be played this weekend. Both the Indrua and Moana Pacifica are in for some tough matches. What chances do the teams have to win their games?
Yes, of course, the Indrua coming off two straight wins in Lautoka in the past 2 weeks against the Waratahs first and then the Force last weekend. They are moving to the Rebels, to play the Rebels in Melbourne. Of course, the Rebels, having had their own challenges, they came out winners over the Waratahs last weekend. The Drua will have to take the games to the Rebels to win, if they want to win their first ever away game in 2024. They haven't been able to do that since the first round. They lost to the Blues, they lost to Moana Pacifica, and they'll be keen to win a home away game this weekend. Moana Pacific are traveling up to meet the Chiefs in Hamilton. A disastrous weekend for them last weekend against the Blues at Eden Park, but Coach Tana Umanga has said that he believes they will continue to improve. They just need to play their own game, minimize the mistakes that they make, and make use of the opportunities they get. So Moana Pacific and Rua both out to win matches this weekend. Interesting how they will turn out in the end. And of course, the Fijian and Rua also competing against the Brumbies in Canberra on Saturday night in a Super W rugby competition game. The Fijian and Rua have won two games so far, and they will be trying to beat the Brumbies so that they can cement a semi-final berth later on in the competition.
Best of luck to our Pacific teams in Super Rugby. Now, you also have some football updates from the region. What is happening and where?
The Oceania Football Championship Under-19 qualifying rounds will kick off in Vanuatu in the next week. Vanuatu, Tonga, Cook Islands, and American Samoa all fighting to qualify. The winner will go to the championship in Samoa in July. And interesting to see that Tonga are already in Vanuatu with a week away from the opening rounds. And Coach Louis Mwavesi says that they want to go in and acclimatize, play some friendly warm-up games against some of the local clubs, and finalize their preparation for the qualifying matches. And one of the best news that has come out for football in the region is that Samoa, the Samoa soccer team, has been able to move up in their ranking following wins over Cook Islands and Tonga in Nuku'alofa two weeks ago. Samoa winning that qualifying round and qualifying for the OFC Men's Championship tournament in Vanuatu later in June. And that sees Samoa moving up, jumped to 181, still 181, but still a big improvement from the 186 they were at on the ranking in the past few weeks. And New Zealand still remains the highest-ranked OFC team at 104 on the FIFA ranking that was released 2 days ago.
Now, some of the other things that we need to keep on our radar is that our region's weightlifters are attempting to qualify for the Olympic Games. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes, interesting one. That's coming up on Monday with a lot of attention turning to that. Will be someone lifter, Don Opelonge, and Taniela Rainimbongi of Fiji, who are going to be competing at the IWF World Cup in Thailand. That is to qualify for the 2024 Paris Olympics. Both tip to qualify through their own competition, but it will be interesting to see how they go. There were other Pacific lifters who are also going to be competing later on Tuesday and during the week next week. But the focus through this weekend will be on Don from Samoa and Taniela Rainimbongi. They need to qualify from the event in Thailand for the Paris Olympics, because that is the last qualifying event for lifters from the South Pacific.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rndi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, till fast 4.